Our next presentation, clay accumulation at textural boundaries in sand pudding greens, presenting author Glenn R. Aubert.
All right, thank you for the introduction. So I'm going to talk to you guys about a component of my PhD research at the University of Nebraska with Bill Kreuzer. So the main focus of my PhD research is studying these iron cemented layers that we've observed in two-tiered sand pudding green soils. We observe them at the interface of sand and gravel, and they reduce water infiltration and results ultimately in drainage system failure in periods of less than 5 years. And so within the first month that I started my PhD at Nebraska, I got a call from a golf course superintendent in Mississippi down in Biloxi, and he sent me this picture of this reddish-colored layer that appeared to be cementing sand and gravel together, and he said, "Hey, I think I have this iron cementing issue that you've described." And so we actually went down there to go check it out. And what we found was that even though it looks like this iron cemented layer, we actually found that this layer was enriched with clay. This is actually a clay layer. And so I'm going to kind of talk about some of the things that we looked at to come to those conclusions. But from a traditional soil standpoint, we kind of approached this from a pedology background, a pedological background. And so we're going to call these BT horizons, clay-enriched horizons. And so this site was located in Biloxi, Mississippi. They had two-tiered putting greens that were constructed in 2005. They were amended with calcined clay. The commercial name for that is Profile. And basically, by 2014, by the time that he called us, their putting greens were draining so slowly that they elected to completely rebuild them. And so within less than 10 years, they had formed these reddish-colored layers, and they were causing such severe drainage issues that they had to completely rebuild the greens. And so when he called me, he said, "Hey, we're actually demolishing the greens in 2 weeks, and so if you want to come, you have to get here very quickly." So we did. And so our research objectives then were to characterize the vertical and lateral distribution of clay. So we had a really unique opportunity because these greens were going to be demolished literally the day after we sampled them. We were able to sample at a much higher resolution. We were able to excavate many soil profiles without regard for disrupting the site at all. And so we wanted to elucidate the source of the clay that was forming these layers. And then finally, we wanted to develop a conceptual model to describe how these layers form, especially with respect to topography. So, you know, the relative elevations of different spots on a single putting green. And so some of the pedological methods that we used were we classified the soil horizons according to soil taxonomy. And then within each soil horizon, we took samples back to the laboratory and we measured the iron oxide content, because remember I said initially we were looking for these iron cemented layers. But then what we ended up finding most interesting was that clay was a predominant factor here. And so we measured the percent clay in these horizons as well. And so our sampling approach is kind of indicated on this figure right here. The y-axis is showing the elevation relative to a reference point. And that reference point was where we were standing off to the side of the green using a total stations instrument to shoot the topographic, you know, elevation. And so we excavated four soil profiles that I'll talk about today. So profile one was the highest in topographic location. Profile 2 was lower, and then you see profile 3 was lower, yet was directly over a drain pipe. And then finally profile 4 was at the lowest topographic location. And so that, the location of these pictures on this graph is accurate. The scale is accurate to the depths of those soil profiles, so you can see where they are relative to each other. And so when we named the soil horizons in these profiles, what we saw was that profile 1 had a weakly formed BT horizon with a kind of reddish color. Profile 2 had a slightly more strongly formed BT horizon. Profile 3 over the drain pipe did not have that alluvial clay layer, did not have the BT horizon. So we wondered whether perhaps water was moving quickly enough over that drain pipe to prevent that clay from accumulating. And then finally, profile number 4, which is at the lowest topographic location, had the most strongly pronounced BT horizon, or clay horizon. And so this is a graph showing the clay content on the x-axis and the relative horizon, the relative depth of the lower boundary of each soil horizon on the y-axis. And so for profile one, which was at the highest topographic location, we saw that towards the soil surface, there was less than a 0.5% clay. And then as we moved down towards the gravel layer, we had this really sharp boundary where we had about 1.2% clay just above the gravel layer, and then no clay in the gravel layer. So we had this really strong textural boundary. So now this graph shows profile one, but I've also added profile number two, which had a lower topographic location. And so what we saw with profile number two, similar to profile one, was that we had a strong textural boundary where we had an accumulation of clay just above the gravel layer. And we also had more clay relative to profile one. So profile one was about 1.2% clay in that BT horizon. But profile two had about 2% clay in the BT horizon. So similarly, when we add profile number four, which was at the lowest topographic location, we had even a little bit more clay, about 2.3% clay. And so not only do we have evidence here for vertical movement of clay, just based on the vertical distribution, but we also have evidence for lateral translocation or movement of clay, where we have more clay accumulating in lower topographic locations. So what I mentioned before, that profile three was directly above a drain pipe, and we did not observe that clay band in the field. And when we went back to the laboratory, the results were very similar to what we observed. We did not have that sharp boundary or that sharp increase in clay content just above the gravel layer. And so some conclusions just from these observations were that this was the first description of alluvial clay bands forming at the sand-gravel interface of two-tiered putting greens. We have evidence for vertical clay movement, and it accumulates where water is perched in the putting green. We also saw that above the drain pipe, we don't have any clay accumulation. And then we have evidence for lateral clay movement, where we see more clay accumulating at lower topographic locations. So this led us to our next question. Where did that clay come from? So we have three hypotheses here that we were working with. So hypothesis one, we thought, well, these soil profiles were amended with calcined clay, and which is physically stable through a kiln firing process. But it's possible that that could have broken down, and then those finer broken down particles could have been translocated with precipitation, irrigation, and accumulated just above the gravel layer. That's hypothesis one. The second hypothesis we had was that we had an upward movement of clay from the compacted subgrade, which in and of itself contained a lot of clay. This might seem unlikely because that's moving against gravity, but we did find a reference from 2012 where they showed that if you have clay suspended in a solution, capillary rise through a sand column will carry that clay with it, and so you can actually have upward movements of clay due to capillary rise, assuming that you have a suspended solution. So we thought it was worth investigating. And then finally, the third hypothesis is we have a clay contaminant, perhaps from construction, perhaps from wind deposition, runoff deposition. We can't say for sure, but we have some clay contaminant that is present, and then it is being translocated downwards with precipitation and irrigation and accumulating above that gravel layer where we have water being preferentially retained. And so our approach to kind of test these hypotheses was kind of, you could think of it as soil forensics. We looked at, we have an X-ray fluorescence analyzer, and so we collected X-ray fluorescence spectra from each of these three areas. So we looked at that alluvial clay layer, the BT horizon. We looked at the calcined clay amendment by itself, and then we looked at that subgrade that was just 10 centimeters below that alluvial BT horizon. And so we know from the literature that X-ray fluorescence spectra are actually like fingerprints. So each unique material, each unique soil, will have a unique X-ray fluorescence spectrum, which is like a fingerprint. And so what we did was we tried to compare the fingerprints of these different samples. And so what we did was we made mounts of the samples. So I isolated the clay size fraction, or the size fraction less than 2 micrometers, and I mounted it on Scotch tape, actually. Scotch tape is really thin, and so it doesn't interfere with the X-ray energy that's going into the sample. And so it actually worked really well as a mount. So we made 6 mounts of each of those three sample types, 6 mounts of the BT Horizon, 6 mounts of the calcined clay, and 6 of the subgrade. We conducted 3 X-ray fluorescence scans per mount. And then each X-ray fluorescence spectrum has 4,000 unique energy levels. And then if, you know, multiplied by 18 scans, we're working with 72,000 data points that we can put into a multivariate analysis. So we use discriminant analysis to model differences among those three classes and try to characterize or separate them into groups. So it's a very high data density and gives us a lot of power to compare these samples. And so what we found was, with the discriminant analysis, the fingerprints don't match. These are three distinct materials. The profile, the calcined clay, all of those scans grouped together very similarly, but they were quite distinct from the alluvial BT horizon and that subgrade material. So we have three distinct materials here. So, based on those data that I showed, we can rule out the first hypothesis that profile was degraded physically and then translocated downwards. We can also rule out the second hypothesis that we had an upward movement of clay from the compacted subgrade. And we're left with this third hypothesis, which we have some clay contaminant, possibly that was present at the time of construction, or we can't rule out wind deposition or runoff deposition. That we had that clay in there and it was translocated downwards to the gravel layer and formed this BT horizon. So for future research, we really want to look at what is the critical clay content required for these BT horizons to form, because we observed these forming with only 2.5% clay. And if you look at the USGA recommendations, you're allowed to have up to 3% clay. And so, you know, the fact that we're seeing these layers that are causing drainage problems with only 2.5% clay, we're asking the question, should we relook at those USGA recommendations and dial it in to try to figure out what happened at this site where we have layers forming with only 2.5% clay? And we're working on a USGA-funded project right now that's still looking at just that. So I would like to acknowledge the USGA for funding. Stephen Wright from the Preserve Golf Course let us come and sample extensively at his site. And then Mike Pearson and Jennifer Ingham from the NRCS were of great help to me in Lincoln, Nebraska. And John Meter of Profile Products was also a great help. And then the following individuals listed below. Matthew Peterson helps quite a bit with the multivariate analysis. So that's all I have for you guys. I'll be happy to take any questions. Sure. Dr. Haribondi? Yeah, so I think the general question was, why don't we see issues like this in all putting greens? Because they're all built to similar specifications, yet we have them forming in some places and not in other places. And so you mentioned Hawaii. The layers we observed there were composed of iron oxide. And so the factors that make those layers form are much different from the factors that go into clay alluviation. And so those are two kind of separate issues. I think one reason that we don't hear about these things as much is because a lot of people don't sample the soil profiles to the depths, all the way down to that 30-centimeter depth just above the gravel layer. Traditionally, we think of soil sampling, in the root zone where we have nutrients and organic matter, but it's a lot more rare to see people taking samples to that full depth, and so it really shows the value of doing so. But to answer your question directly, we just need to do more work to really answer that question. We're not still entirely sure why we have these layers forming at some sites, but not at others. It's still puzzling. So we just need to look at more and more sites to see what they all have in common and what they don't have in common.
So. We've got time for one brief question.
So So the question was about using kaolinite-based soil amendments. Is that correct? Oh, I see. Like spray products have. That's a really interesting thought. We haven't investigated that, but right, some of those products are formulated with kaolinite. So if you make repeated applications, you'd have to go and calculate, how many kilograms of kaolinite you're adding over time. But that's actually would be a really valuable thing to look into. Yeah, that's a great point.
Great job.
Thank you.
Let's thank our speaker.